Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course, wherever you get your podcast. I'm Ailey Packham and we're all just a little bit discombobulated in association with Flowers Unlimited. Oh, God. Where do we start with this one, then? Our heaviest defeat in 67 years, what was seventh heaven for Forest, was seventh hell for those of an Albion persuasion. It was a performance that simply was not good enough and has had many asking the question about what the process is and why should we trust it. Well, let's hope we can see a reaction this weekend as we face Chelsea in the FA Cup on Saturday after Forest showed a reaction after losing 5-0 the week before. The week got a little bit more confusing, though, as we allowed Evan Ferguson to go to a Premier League rival as he is reunited with Graham Potter and Bruno at West Ham. And it was not all bad news, though, as we added Aaron Cashin from Derby, who goes straight into the squad for now. But we've also added Stefanos Tsitsimas from Nuremberg and Clement Bischoff from Brumby, who will link up with us in the summer. We also held on to Karu Matoma, who quite simply wasn't interested in going to Saudi. Joining me today, as ever, is Alan Wares. And today we are getting on a jet plane and heading stateside as we welcome three Americans who will hopefully add some perspective to the trials and tribulations of the last week. So, from Pennsylvania, we welcome back the president of the Stateside Seagulls. It's Laura Ellen Ashcraft. From Seagulls over Columbus, please welcome Lucas, not to be confused with Alexander, Denny. And from the DC Girls, please welcome David Devlin Foltz. Hello, everybody, and welcome. We're in the Sussex. You are not. How lucky are you?
Welcome, madam. Welcome, gentlemen. I mean, we will have to talk about the crushing blow from last week presently. But just as a quick heads up to introduce yourselves, perhaps Laura Ellen, if you'd like to go first, give us a quick recap on your bio as to your Albion supporting life.
Yes, so I became a supporter and quick all-in fan. In the 2018-2017 era, and immediately realized that this was the Premier League club for me. I lived in Pittsburgh at the time, support local soccer there, the Pittsburgh Riverhounds, who are in the second division in Pittsburgh, and continue to support them. And was looking for a Premier League club, and this was the one that I chose. And since that time, joined the Stateside Seagulls for the U.S. tour that the Albion did a couple summers ago, joined the board, and I'm really excited that this season is my first season as president of the Stateside Seagulls, and so really excited to spread the cheer and the love for
the
this
gospel.
Club,
yeah.
the gospel. Let's go with that for this club across our nation.
Cheer and love is stretching it this week, you know.
You know,
look,
we need
something this week. Trust me, I am still absolutely flat as a pancake, which is ironic because it's nearly Shrove Tuesday.
Well, never mind that. David Devlin Foltz from DC Seagulls, welcome to the Albion Roar. Give us a quick précis of your Albion supporting history.
Right. The quick précis is I joined up a couple of years after you, Laura Ellen, and did so because my kids were already following Premier teams. They sort of dragged me into it. I decided I would not be another bandwagon member for one of the big six. Mm-hmm. At the time, Brighton reminded me of the baseball and football teams I grew up following in the United States, who were consistently inconsistent, maddening, frustrating. And I thought, that's the team for me. One that looked like it was just, and they have not disappointed.
You recognize the kindred spirit.
Yeah.
I did. And then I was lucky enough to join on as we rose from you know, near relegation all the way up to sixth in Europe. And a wonderful ride, and now we're coasting back on the other side of the hill, apparently.
Can I just
I'll
point out
stop.
that the previous 121 years have not been like this?
No.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about bandwagon jumping, you know, we get to sixth and then, right, that's it. Anyway, welcome aboard, David. Welcome aboard. Lucas slash Alexandra from.
He's changed his name now.
He has. Again, welcome aboard. Again, what's your the background of you hitching your wagon to the Seagulls?
Well, I'm here in Columbus, Ohio, where we have the Columbus Crew. And back in the 17-18 season for the Crew, our owner tried to move us. We had a very tough time as a franchise, and really a kindred spirit with a local community really gathered around the team to save our soccer team, our football team. And it's a lot of things in similar history with Brighton and the way the local community gathered, local ownership. All this was very important to me. And I have always loved the game, but never had a top flight team. So when that happened to our local team here in the Crew, it just really sent off a lot of similarities between Brighton and joined up around then. And it's been a ton of fun. There's a lot of very similar, a lot of similarities between Brighton and Columbus, and just really enjoyed the ride ever since, yeah, right about before the pandemic.
Yeah, I mean that does sound very, very similar, actually. Obviously, homelessness does that to you, and
Well, we don't do franchise football here. I mean, we did it once, and that went down like a cup of
apologies for
cold
the
sick.
terminology.
Yeah, no. So where was the owner looking to take you from and to?
Austin, Texas, he bought it, and then he now actually owns the Austin, Texas team. So he did get his wish. His name is Anthony Precourt. We don't like him very much around here in these Columbus parts yet, and most people around the country don't. But we did have some local ownership step up and was able to save the Crew with a really grassroots movement and some big local investment. And now we have a lovely team. We won the League's Cup, the MLS Cup. We just sold our top player to Real Betis. So it's been a lot of fun here in Columbus the last 5 years with local ownership.
That's
fantastic.
excellent.
Well,
I mean,
hang on,
AD, when you say going from Columbus, now forgive my lack of American geography. Columbus, Ohio is in the top of the country, not far from the Canada land. Austin, Texas is down the bottom near the
yes.
Mexicans, isn't it? That's quite a fair few removal lorries he's going to need, isn't it?
It is Austin is seen as a very hip trendy city to move to, but it's very similar to Columbus, state capital, massive state university, a lot of high industry, but we get snow here. It's snowing here, and in Austin they don't, so
Yeah.
a
I'm
lot of
just
reasons
thinking
to
it's
move.
more thousands of miles, isn't it? Or at least
Oh
hundreds, isn't it?
yes,
Like,
thousands.
it's something that always completely and utterly bamboozles me. And it's like, I just don't understand the whole franchise thing. I mean, it's basically, I mean,
It's a bit like Tony.
if you've got something that's based in a community, it stays in that community. You don't just uproot it and move it halfway across the country. I mean, it's the same with American football. I just don't get it. I mean, it'll always be the LA Raiders to me. And apparently they're in Vegas now. I mean, it's like, what?
Well, it's a bit like Tony Bloom trying to move the Albion to Istanbul.
Yeah.
You know, it's that far. So,
It's going to be the Saudi Arabian Dolphins next, probably.
could we get the worst part of this out of the way, please, now, AD?
Oh, yes, the weakest horribles, or as it
Hispania
was,
horribilis.
yeah, or hebdomadis is
Now it's
the
interesting.
book.
Can I just put out another stat here? I mean, I know I'm still delaying the inevitable here, but you said at the top of the show, AD, it was 67 years, or our heaviest defeat since 60 for 67 years, and that defeat that you're talking about, which is our first ever game in the second division, that which is now called the Championship, in the 1958-59 season, our first ever game, we lost 9-0 to Middlesbrough. Brian Clough scored 5 goals. I will also say the reverse, it's our heaviest ever league defeat. The reverse fixture, we lost 6-4 at home and yet still managed to finish above Middlesbrough that season. But, you know, I said just before we started recording this, there was another defeat. There was a game, a League Cup match in 1966 where Albion lost 8-0 to Northampton Town.
What a load of cobblers. Anyway,
Hey!
anyway, Laura Ella, I mean, speaking of stats, the game at the weekend was just ridiculous. I mean, you can make anything out of whatever you like, I suppose. But you know, if you look at the stats, like, oh, we made 524 passes to Forest 321, with a pass accuracy of 85%, and Forest had 77%. Who wins the game? It's ridiculous. I mean, it was just an absolute horror show. It was a horror team selection. I have no idea what was going on. I admittedly that there was
Are you
some
answering
big.
Laura's question for her, or
I'm ranting, basically.
you are ranting? I mean,
There will be a
it's a very
question at
good
the end of
rant.
it. But I mean, at the end of it, I mean, we know that there was some sickness going around the camp beforehand, which robbed us of Carlos Baleba and Yassin Ayari. Like, that didn't help. But playing a one-man midfield against a team, we know exactly what they're going to do. We've seen it week in, week out. We've seen how they play. And to leave ourselves that wide open, it's suicide, isn't
Right,
it?
so AD's question is, Laura Ellen, Cadbury's or Hershey?
Now, I will tell you, now we're going to get into chocolate. The Hershey factory is truly within an hour drive of my house where I'm sitting right now. So, I can't say any answer to
I
please
can.
anyone.
I
Just
can
in case
say
they're listening.
Hershey's can kiss off.
Okay. I think
You see what
when
I did there?
I
Kiss. I said kiss.
I did, and did you see how I hopped right on over at 80. That it was painful to watch because it was fairly early. It was an early match here in the States, and then we certainly had one of our board members who lives on the West Coast who I think got up at like 3 a.m. to watch that match. So I do believe he started enjoying some adult beverages quite early in the morning for him. But I think it's for me, it's one of those things that you kind of alluded to it, right? We can say trust the process all we want. I was very upset for maybe an hour or two after. And then I was like, does it matter? It probably does matter, but I can't let it matter because it just like it was so painful to watch. It was, I kept walking away from the television and then I kept coming back and then I kept walking away because, exactly to your point, 80, right? When you look at the stats, you're like, this cannot be the score line that we're seeing on the field right now. And so I am choosing just to forget about it, as I said before we started recording, right? I don't, I like, can we move on? I don't know. Maybe that's not the answer that you wanted to hear.
I don't know. I mean, Lucas, at the end of the day, right? So it's how you react to this that matters now, because I mean, we know it was just a horror show, and there's quite a lot to unpack about the performances, and there's a lot of 4 out of 10 performances from some of the players, which I think we
Four
may
out of
come
ten,
down
you are a
to
very gracious
the
man. You're a
manager,
very
but.
gracious man, 4 out of 10. And I think it's apropos that you brought us on when it was a football score, an American football score. We lost seven. It was a
What a
touchdown.
cricket score.
It's terrible. I love this game. I've watched a lot and I don't understand it as deep as the English folk do, but I know better than to put one central midfielder out there against a team like against any team. He's playing. Is he playing 4D chess? I don't know. But when you had O'Reilly on the bench, I don't understand why O'Reilly wasn't out there. Hinchelwood, God bless him, he's going to be a great player. He's played what? How much has he played in the last 5 games? He hasn't played that much, right? Like, and we just threw him to the wolves all by himself. It was just absolutely stunning to watch. And again, something they just 7-0 is. I'm going to be sitting on it for a while until I see a couple matches pull back around the other way.
Well, Hinchinwood Al hasn't been that isolated since we played Aston
Aston
Villa
Villa.
at a 12:30 kickoff in the Midlands
Well,
last season.
I want to hear David's opinion before I go on my unpacking rant. So, David, I assume that now you say you're in DC. So it was you're are you on the same time zone as Laura Ellen? Was it sort of a stupid o'clock in the morning for you?
Yeah, 7:30 a.m. Kickoff, and I lasted. I confess, I did not last the entire match. I was in despair at halftime. We were entertaining our niece, who is English, deep, deep blue Chelsea fan. She had sat through the Everton match with me the previous week, so to have this was deeply depressing for me. I sent them off to sightsee in DC and went for a long walk myself. So let me just pose, instead of a comment on the match, let me pose this ethical question to you, Alan and Adie. Had you been in Nottingham and happened into that pub that was putting out a free pint, per goal. Would you have drunk that pint?
Oh, God, yeah. It's
I'd have taken it in whiskey.
You've clearly not met us before, have you?
No. We're
I
Brighton and
thought.
Hove Albion fans, and that's why
Yeah,
we drink.
this of course was the pub in Nottingham that was giving away a free pint to anyone in the pub for every goal that Forest scored. So when they went and scored seven, and to be fair, they did actually
They actually honoured
honour it as
everything, didn't
well.
they? Yeah,
So
they honoured it.
fair play to them.
They were on
Well,
they were on South Today, which is our local news program here, which was, really rubs it in, considering Nottingham isn't in our region. I think that they said that they worked out that they gave away 300 pints, which is about anywhere between 12 and 1500 quid's worth of beer. I mean, it's good luck to them. I mean, it's as PR goes, it's the sort of kind of PR you can't really buy. It is a silly thing because at the very least you think, well, up to four goals, and then you think, well, hang on, you're being a bit ambitious going four goals, and then they go and get seven. So, well, I say good luck to them, and it was amusing, and I think that the owners, the landlord and landlady, did take it on the chin.
go on, Al. Go on. I'm waiting for you to unpack then. Go on.
Well, it's not so much the game itself. The game is the game. It's a single. If you take it as a single isolated game. We've been on the. I remember we've dished out an 8-0 win. I remember watching us win 7-0. We've stuck six past Wolves, and that game could have been 10 or 11. That was crazy, that game. And it happens to other clubs. And you pick yourself up, you brush yourself down. I remember when we beat Blackpool in our first or second season at the stadium, and Paul Ince was the manager. And again, that was a good hiding, and we were well worth our six. And Paul
But we
Ince,
scored seven goals in that game.
well, we did actually. Yeah. And Paul Ince, the manager, was good. He was stoical enough that he said, "Look, it's one of those things. It's not a freak result, but it is a freak scoreline." He said, "If it was happening week in, week out, we'd have troubles." And I think that actually, oddly enough, kind of perversely, a 7-0 scoreline is better than a 3-0 scoreline. And the reason I say this is that one, we do get humiliated by it. There is a sense of sort of a certain level of embarrassment by it. But having said that, Bournemouth conceded seven not that long ago. Palace have, Southampton have got a habit of conceding nine, and so on. What it does do, it brings into focus absolutely everyone. No longer can this be just one of those things that the club and the team are going to say, well, okay, we didn't do this, we didn't do that. They now know that they are, I suppose, I can't think of the right word at the moment. Their ethos is on the line. It's not like this whole trust of the process thing, which is a phrase that drives me around the twist.
Well,
We've
if it drives you around the twist, don't tell us that. Tell that to Fabian, because he's the one that keeps trying, like.
Why he uses that phrase, I don't know, but it's basically saying, look, things aren't necessarily as exciting as they were under De Zerbi. Things aren't even necessarily as exciting there under Potter, but we're getting there. The things, everything is evolving. And if you don't, you can either come with us on this evolution, or you can, go and watch Chelsea against Everton. Sorry, that wasn't intended as a dig there, David. That came out as one. I do apologise. It sounded like a dig, and it wasn't. Now, my point is that a 7-0 defeat brings into focus absolutely everything, and those players will be hurting. They're going to be just as angry and embarrassed and hurt as we are. But they're the ones that are in the position to do something about it. Yes, you're quite right, Lucas, when you said it just now. You're going to want to see a reaction. You're going to want to see that we are not 7-0, stuffed dolls. We have a weird big result at least once a year, and we have done since you get to the Premier League. Those are the fine lines. As a result, what the worst thing it's done is made our goal difference horrific. We lost a game. It would be the same number of points if we lost 1-0 as it is if we lost 7-0. I'm just trying to the perspective I'm putting things into is, yeah, we were shown up, we were humbled, we were humiliated. But that is then down to the true test of the Albion is not down to how we played in that game. It's how we deal with it from here onwards. And until then, until we see what that answer is, there is no value in getting so upset about it.
I've got major question marks over the manager though. I mean, you're sending out. Look, we've met the guy. He's a nice enough guy, but I've met De Zerbi. When you're in a room with De Zerbi, you knew you're in a room with De Zerbi. He had an aura about him. if I'm one of the players that went out on that went out with that formation that he asked them to play in that game, I would be asking questions as well. It was just unforgivable to go out with that formation when it. We know I've watched Forest a lot this season. I can see exactly. Oh look, here's what they're going to do. They're going to suck up the pressure and they're going to bomb down the wings. We had no cover on the wings because we knew they've played like this all season. They even did it at the Amex. Don't you know? You've got to have a look and see what the opposition are going to, how they play before you go into a match and set a formation, which is frankly had a massive, great big hole in the middle of it.
Well, hang on. Did we have a hole in the middle or a hole in the wings?
We had a hole everywhere.
Right. Because people are saying that we play with, what was it, four defenders, one midfielder and five forwards. We
had a one-man midfield, basically.
So where was the second person? What were they doing? Irrespective of who they are supposed to be, i.e. whether it's a forward or a winger or someone who's playing, quote, out of position, which is, again, a phrase I'm never that fussed on, who was supposed to be alongside Hinshelwood then, in your opinion?
Well, that's
I mean,
exactly
out of that
it.
Lineup.
Is that, that's exactly it. I mean, basically...
So who wasn't playing in position alongside Hinshelwood?
Well, basically, we had a forward line that was basically Pedro, Welbeck, Jorginho, Mitoma... And so you pick who is meant to, I suspect it's probably meant to be Jorginho.
Jorginho is probably the most deep lying of those players, but all of them are capable of actually then getting back. They all get back. They know how to get back.
If you're going to do that, you play with one up top, and then you basically have a 4-3-3 that comes a 4-4-3-2. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm discombobulated again. I can't even do math.
Should we move on to America then? Because I mean, with all due respect, AD, I think you just sort of, you know, even
I'm
more,
exasperated as
yeah,
what
you're
I am.
Because... 5 days down the line, and you haven't actually worked out what it is that is cheesing you off. Apart from, you know, I think that the real thing here is, and this is where we as fans have a role. Certainly, those that are going to be in the stadium. Don't get me wrong. We've got. I don't know. Is it a good thing or a bad thing we're playing in the FA Cup? Forget the time. Forget the hour. But is it a good or bad thing we're playing in the FA Cup? But my point is that, and I understand this is what happened in Nottingham, is that we were so bad that a lot of fans stayed around and applauded their team because they knew that what they did not need was a whole load of dogs abuse, because those players know that they can probably give themselves dogs abuse. Yeah.
Look, the players know, the fans know, the management know, everybody knows it was not acceptable. And the way and yes, you're right, it's how we react to that.
We have to wait for the reaction. If it happens again, then we know we've got major, major problems.
Yeah, but like I just need to see more from this team. And then Lucas, you're nodding.
Yeah, can I ask you guys a quick question? Because this made me reflect back on specifically the Leicester game and the Wolves game a little bit more in terms of tactical acumen. And looking back, I don't know if this is the point where we need to see something going forward. I thought it was those games, those matches perhaps, and then this might be, you know, going over the side of the cliff. I don't know it just made me reflect on those matches.
What do you mean by that? When you're talking about I know what you mean about the games that we threw away in the last few minutes, but yeah. what's the question you're asking? I'm with you.
Especially like the tactical move to bring in Igor at the end of the Leicester game and not, you know, maybe sit back a little bit farther. Just decisions that, just looking back on it now, have like, oh, that was I questioned it at the time. Like, maybe that wasn't the right thing. And, you know, we all make mistakes every single day at our job, and that's absolutely fine. We can't be perfect, but it's starting to compound and compound and compound. And I don't know if this is really, you know, the time where we as a fan base look at like, oh, you know, we need to be better. We should have been better after some of those mistakes, right? Like, so that's just kind of what I'm thinking about and looking back at those games.
Well, what you're talking about there is that those last minute mistakes, I say Leicester, I think the tactic is sound to bring on a defender in the last minute to shore up what you've got. I think that's the fact he then made a mistake, got booked and was, quote, the cause of Leicester's equaliser is just sod's law. But in each of those games, there we are, and this is where I'm not so sure about AD's point here, is that when he says we're out of our depth, those are games that we should have, could and should have won. And I include Forest at home, could and should have won. In that case, that would put us 8-9 points higher than where we are. And that therefore shows that, you know, this is still a crazy division. The fact that we've actually left too many, in my opinion, and I think AD will agree with this, far too many points out on the pitch is one of those things that's happened almost every year for about the last 5 or 6 years, with the exception of that season we finished sixth, where we actually got a lot more results than we were expecting. Yeah, we've left far too, you know, the shooting has been abysmal. The finishing has been abysmal. The rounding off the game has been not good enough. But for the most part, we've played some, still play some very, very good football. Although it counts for little if you don't then do the two basic things. A, stop them scoring, and B, make sure you score yourself.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You commented last week, I think appropriately, that against Everton, we were just slow. We were slow. We're not moving the ball. We're not quick the way good teams are, frankly, and the way we are at our best. And that's what my dear Chelsea-loving niece commented on in watching us against Everton, and then watching the beginning of this week's disaster. And there's a great bit of advice from the legendary John Wooden, the beloved coach of the UCLA men's basketball team that was so dominant decades ago. He said, "Be quick, but don't hurry." And that's, in others, don't make the stupid mistake. Be quick, but think. And that seems to be lacking in the attack. We've got great people out there, but yeah, the missing the final shot, but also not seeing the right pass and not making it fast.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the point I was going to make, Al, is I'm not saying anyone's out of the depth here, but what I am saying is I'm not seeing enough from the team. I'm generally quite level-headed about it. I'm not overly critical when we have been terrible before, but what I want to see, I just want to see. I've got the last few weeks have left me with a lot of questions. I just want to see how we're going to answer those.
I know your point. I mean, oddly enough, before the Everton game, there we were winning three matches away from home, very, very convincingly. By the way, I know one was a Championship side, but even so, we won three games very convincingly. You think, great, perhaps we have turned the corner. And then we have this kind of anti-football that we can't cope with. And my point would be is that when we struggled against Ipswich down here, not because they parked the bus, but because there is this different mindset when you're at home. Possibly, you know, I still think that, you know, for everything that you're going to point your finger at, nothing still says that we should have lost 7-0 to Nottingham Forest, apart from the fact that on the day, Nottingham Forest beat us 7-0. Yes, you can talk about the taxes, you can talk about the personality, you can talk about this, but my point still is, and this is what I come back to, maybe Laura Ellen is as well, I want to bring you in on this, is, like I say, to actually fuss and worry about this one game, and it is a freak result, or let's hope it's a freak result, it's how, Laura Ellen, we move forward.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think it's been interesting. So I'm gonna tie in my local club, which I still consider Pittsburgh.
The Riverhounds.
The Riverhounds. Yes, that's right. Thank you. See, AD, I've been on here enough. AD knows. but the Pittsburgh Riverhounds, I have been a supporter of them for I would say most of their history as a club. Right, they are not one of the over century old clubs like you have there in England, and having that perspective of seeing the club evolve over time, right? And I was in Pittsburgh, which is in Western Pennsylvania, close to Ohio, when and we have a lot of Crew fans that overlap with Pittsburgh Riverhounds fans, right? And the Save the Crew momentum going around that, right? To see this overarching trajectory, I think bringing it back to the Albion, as I have been supporting for longer, I think, Alan, to your point, I've seen this journey, right? Like, I mean, listening to the war over the years, watching the games, I mean, how many weeks have you both come on here and said, well, you know, they can't hit the broadside of a barn, right? Like they cannot shoot, they cannot score. And these have been ongoing issues. And so I and at the same time, the trajectory overall is slowly increasing, right? It's slowly increasing over time. I do think the European season, which was incredible, which was amazing. You know, I have the jersey in my closet, right? I think it was a bit of an anomaly, right? We were very lucky that season for many different things. But I think the overall trajectory is up, right? I'm not going to say that phrase that we don't like. But yeah,
Crystal Palace.
Well, okay, the two phrases that I don't that we don't say. So yes, I don't know. I think for me, right, this is a blip. Hopefully, right, this is a blip. And if it's not a blip, we are still going to support this club, and we are still going to support the team, and we are still going to show up, right? And we're still going to do it, right? And at the end of the day, it's not, our salaries are not being paid by the club. I mean, my salary is not being paid by the club, right? I'm here to support, and I love this game, and I love this club and the community. And so I don't know, that's where I land, and that's probably how I got to be president of Stateside Seagulls.
Okay, well let's just move it. I do want, before we go on to
You're gonna have
what you're
another
doing
rant.
over there, I do just want to have a quick look at the ins and outs. And actually, one I wanted to speak particularly to you guys was he's actually already been here for a month now, which is obviously he came from Inter Miami, so obviously you would have seen a lot more of him than we did, which is Diego Gomez, of course. What did you make of him over there, and what do you think he's capable of bringing to the party?
I can jump in if you don't mind.
Yeah, please
Diego is
do.
one of those players, specifically in the MLS. It's very clear when you go to a game or you watch on TV, oh, this kid doesn't belong, right? Like he's doing something different. He's playing at a different level. He's processing the game quicker. You can tell pretty quickly in the MLS. It's still pretty high level of soccer we have. I love it. We get to walk it down and see some great players, but it's very clear when you have players like Cucho Hernandez, who just went to Real Betis, Aiden Morris, who just went to Middlesbrough here from Columbus, and you see Diego Gomez at that age. He doesn't belong on this pitch. He doesn't belong on this. He needs to be at a higher level. So he processes the game much quicker. He plays really good. I'm surprised we didn't. I know he came on later in that game, but we could have put him in central midfield. And I know he hasn't been over there for that long. He's acclimating, but he clearly, when you watched him in MLS, didn't belong over here. And it's really cool that he temporarily, lined up with his Paraguayan international, but I'm really excited to see where he goes. And as he acclimatizes, I think next year is going to be great
Yeah. I
for
was
him.
about to say, do you think he can make the leap? Does he
I
have
think he
does
can.
he have the let's put it this way, does he have the mental capacity to do so?
I think so. I've seen nothing at that level, and it's really hard to translate from MLS to the top flight over there. It's really tough. The physicality, the quite frankly brutality of the league every single week that you got to put in on the pitch. But I think this guy has as good a shot as any kid coming over from the MLS that I've seen in the
Okay.
last 6, 7 years.
Well, hopefully it's that we're enough at FA Cup action at the weekend. So I think he'll possibly maybe get a start in that game. So hopefully that will give him more game time and actually a chance of actually finishing the season strongly, because it's like we need something at the moment.
Well, this is the nature of the FA Cup. Well, certainly the League Cup in the beginning of the season, but the FA Cup. Yes, we're playing Chelsea, and yes, we do want to win it. So therefore, Fabian will put out. Well, thankfully, because we're not in Europe, we're not going to have these sort of Sunday Thursday games. So Fabian is in a position to put out the strongest possible side rather than, having to rotate in a manic way that Roberto Di Zerbi did. So if there is no one else then available. Then yes, Gomez is probably going to get the nod ahead of him. But
All right.
the
So if
only
he's.
thing I can think of as to why he isn't starting is that and it's the kind of that sort of nominal leap that you don't know between the MLS and the Premier League is the crazy levels of fitness you need to have in the Premier League to start. We've seen so many, but I can't think of a player, let's put it this way, I can't think of a player that we've signed that hit the ground, not for a long time anyway, that hit the ground running from day one. Probably the last person was Matoma, and that's because we'd seen him doing stuff with Union Saint-Gilloise. But apart from that, even Rutter took a bit of time. Welbeck, well, he's 100 years old anyway, but I'm thinking of one of the kids.
Leo Ochoa, probably.
Ochoa, instant hero, absolutely. But yeah, even that was what, 10, 11 years ago. So,
Yeah. Okay. Well, like speaking of strikers, we are now incredibly light up front, having allowed Evan Ferguson to go to a Premier League rival, which I am fuming about. I don't understand this move out. I just don't understand it. You're shaking your head, Lucas, as well.
Yeah, it's shocking. The loss was brutal, and what you brought up, Alan, about the goal differential is true. But we still have a lot to fight for and a lot to play for. And West Ham is right there nipping at our heels. Evan Ferguson can go there, score 6-7 goals, and just, you know, boom, right above the table. I've been a big fan. His sister actually played soccer in college about an hour away at Ohio University here in Ohio, Evan Ferguson's sister. So all of us here in Columbus have been big fans, but I'm just blown away by it. Why is he – send him to the continent, right? Loan him to the continent. I don't understand.
Well, and this I just don't understand how he's fallen so far down the pecking order, Al. Yeah, but that's the point, isn't it? Because we don't know doesn't mean to say that it's the wrong thing. You said you're fuming, but actually it could be the perfect thing for him. If he was going permanently...
He ain't coming back, Al. He's not coming back.
Well, we don't know that, do we? He could come back and West Ham might turf him out at the end of next month. You never know, because they're fella. Who knows why he went? Yes, he's further down the pecking order, but there is a reason... Well, let's put it this way. We know he's got talent, so there's a reason why he isn't playing. We don't know what that reason is. So until such time as I do, because like I say, it's not a lack of ability. In theory, he could still be playing for the under-21s. He's not going to, because I think it'll be a bloody insult. But there is a reason what that reason. And this is the nature of all these things. If we were top of the table and flying high and Ferguson wasn't playing, we said, well, he's surplus to requirements. And here we are, exactly the same thing, where whatever the reason he's going is.
Is there just enough evidence that it's a lack of confidence and that he needs to be somewhere else and build it back up? And then, yeah, God forbid, AD, that we lose him. I want to bring him back.
Well, and that ability, I mean, obviously there's a patience issue with the player, maybe, he's believing his own hype to a certain degree, possibly. I know there's been health issues with him.
You could pick about 8 or 9 reasons, AD.
But the bottom line is, I mean, we've got Danny Welbeck as our one fit out and out striker now, and he's not often always fit. So where does that leave you? I mean, it leaves you. We've also Julian Cizo's gone, another striker who would have filled in the numbers. Should we have issues with injuries and illness?
That should tell you a lot, then, shouldn't it? Here we are, Welbeck, who's spent his entire career as a sick note, as the quote out and out striker. And yes, Pedro is a better player playing behind Welbeck, and Ferguson still can't get a gig. That should tell you a lot. It could be, like I say, one of about 8 or 9 reasons, and it could be one reason, or it could be all 9. It could even be to his detriment, him sticking around. And therein lies the point. We don't know.
Well, only time will tell. But I'll hold my counsel until the time has told. But in the interim, you're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. Lucas, who are we sponsored by?
By the wonderful Flowers Unlimited.
Oh, that's brilliant. David, where, do you know anything about Flowers Unlimited?
Well, Flowers Unlimited is my go-to for all my floral needs in the greater metropolitan Brighton area. Why,
and,
yes.
And Laura Ellen, you look like you're surrounded by a load of Triffids over there. I mean, were they from Flowers Unlimited in Portland Rove Hove?
If they shipped to the U.S., I would seriously consider it. But unfortunately, I'm sure there's something about bringing plants from one country to another. But yes.
Not good use of air miles, is it?
Absolutely.
I am excited. I will be coming in a week or so. And I was planning on going and going to Flowers Unlimited and seeing what they had and seeing if we could
season ticket holder, and as a My Albion Plus member, you get 20% off anything that you buy there. So,
yes. Now, Alan.
Hello.
Last week we had a competition, and where someone, one lucky winner, is going to be very popular next week, being in Valentine's Day. We have a lovely bouquet of red roses.
A dozen red roses
to give away, worth a fabulous £65. Mm-hmm. And I've got a hat here.
Well, first things first, let's remind ourselves of the question I asked, which if we rewind 12 years to the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, where we beat Crystal Palace 3-0, we had two goal scorers that day. the two scorers that day were David Lopez and AD?
Leo Ochoa.
They were.
he scored two goals that day, including an absolute beauty, the third one. It's still my favourite, even though Lopez's free kick was great. I love the way he then slid down, stuck his thumb in his mouth, and then someone absolutely wiped him out. I'm surprised he didn't bite his thumb off. Anyway, so we have some winners. Do pick us a winner, please, AD.
The winner is a Mr. John Lang.
So congratulations, John. We'll be in touch in the next day or so for Dave Costa of Flowers Unlimited to arrange transit of a dozen red roses. Thank you, everyone else who entered. I'm sure that we'll be having further competitions into the rest of the season. Like I say, thank you, everyone who entered, and congratulations, John.
Absolutely. Okay, so... We're gonna move on from the misery.
So let's go back stateside. Let's start with you again, David. So you said that you finally jumped on the bandwagon and kind of seen the light and joined the good guys. What was it specifically that actually made you say, well, of all 20, you said I didn't want to do the big six, but what made you choose one of the other 14, and why particularly Brighton?
Yeah, this was a deeply serious search, a deeply introspective process for me.
You closed your eyes and threw something at a dartboard, didn't you?
Worse. I was watching on our beloved Peacock week after week EPL matches, and I said, look, I love a seaside town. I love the blue and white. I even love having a seagull as a mascot, even after Njai did his thing. Imitating the seagull, I still love me a seagull as a mascot. And as I said before, I didn't want one of them high flyers. I wanted a team that would struggle, that would remind me of my youth supporting struggling teams. So here I am. That was the thought process, and I've never looked back. Still love that blue and white.
Do the actual bird, the seagull, have the same reputation in the States as they do here? Chips and
absolutely. And when we were briefly for 1 week, I think it was 2 years ago, top of the table after 1 week.
Yeah,
remember that, on goal difference over Arsenal. I posted in our local family chat group a photo of a seagull on a table eating some French fries, and said, "Seagulls, top of the table." There you go.
See what you did there.
That's great.
So, Lucas, I've actually just realised something as we were talking here. So you can't see, to our listener at home here, Lucas, I think, originally signed into Zoom on his wife's name, Alexandra. And it's either that or Lucas really is called Alexandra, because AD, remember, he's a Crew fan.
Oh,
you see, Crew Alexandra.
All right,
that wasn't really the. Are you now going to actually get yourself a soft spot for Crew Alexandra, Lucas, or would you like to sort of spend a better time saying, what on earth made you pick Brighton?
Yeah, would love to watch some League Two. I think they're in League Two. Yeah, some League Two action.
I've had some great times in Crew, so I'm not hearing of anything about it.
Yeah, I'm just going to quickly say, ahead of what you're saying here, when we go to away games, we have there's two sort of towns we go to. One we call get in, get out, and one is get in, stay in. And the get in, stay ins are those towns that have the best pubs, the friendliest people, and the best time. Don't get me wrong, your day is still ruined by 90 minutes of football. But there are some that are get in, get out, but some are get in, stay in. Sorry, back to you, Lucas. I apologize.
Not a worry, guys. I love hearing about those towns and those stories and the traveling away days. But I've been a Crew fan, and just their story about the owner trying to move our team out of town, and just how the local community fought and rallied and really came around the team and saved our Crew here in Columbus. And now we have local ownership. That was something really important to me. And you have a local ownership there in Brighton, very similar town, a university, very open and accepting. We're a very open, loving Midwest city. And I just really enjoyed that local ownership and just kind of that underdog mentality. Here in town, we have college football is the second biggest sport in our country. And I went to Ohio State. Our team is the big bad boy in college football. And so that automatically took off the big bad teams for me. So I was just attracted to the history of the team, the rivalry, the fact that it's not a local town derby, that it's a rivalry. That's very after my heart as a college football fan, just kind of, you know, some real hatred, some real rivalry. I really enjoyed that. So, so yeah, there's so many attractive things about that. And now since becoming a really diehard supporter, just the here in Columbus, a lot of people identify with that. So we've really grown our club here in Columbus, and it's been a ton of fun.
Well, Laura Allen, I was going to ask you that question, actually, because, I mean, obviously we've got David from representing DC. We've got Lucas representing Columbus. How many branches of the Stateside Seagulls are there now?
There's not a great answer to that. And here is a little bit of the reason. So Stateside Seagulls is the entire country. We cover all of the United States. And the way that we do that is through fostering relationships with folks across the country, right? So whether it's me here on the East Coast connecting with someone on the West Coast or and it's also encouraging those local groups. So it's encouraging the DC Seagulls, the Seagulls over Columbus, the group in Chicago, the folks in New York City, right? Thinking about how can we foster those relationships. Some of those groups have evolved into more of their own independent thing where we do not provide oversight. We're not here to kind of, you know, cross T's and dot I's and those kinds of things. We're here to support. We're here to encourage the love of the game, the love certainly of the Albion, and then hopefully getting people to get out and get into your local community and to support your local soccer club, whatever that looks like, whether that's an MLS team, which is our top division here in the U.S., or one of the Division II teams.
But you've got a lot of members now, though, haven't you? I mean, it's quite it's a massive, massive organization now.
Yes, we are up to around 1,200 members of Stateside Seagulls, which is incredible to have that. We did a run of, I'm wearing mine. I know this is an audio platform, but we ordered a whole bunch of Stateside Seagulls official scarves from the club. And you know, we're really working to get the word out there. And so, yeah, it's been wonderful. We've been one of our new initiatives this year. We have a really wonderful, robust volunteer board of folks who, this is my colleague Andy, who gets up at 3 o'clock in the morning, right, to watch the Seagulls. And that there's something to be said about that, right? It's a different kind of fandom. It's a different kind of support than, hey, I'm going every Saturday. I'm going up to the Amex or, you know, whatever that looks like, listening on the radio to the match. But it's a different kind of commitment here in the States. And so, we have a wonderful board. We're doing a lot of Player of the Month voting. So for Stateside Seagulls members, the email will be coming out tonight or early tomorrow.
Are you launching it on the Albion Roar?
No, we've been doing it. So we've had a player of a month all season, and then we will calculate up that total where our members get to vote, right? It is a member only thing, and we'll have a player of the season that we'll announce at the end of the season, which is really exciting. So, and the club has been so supportive of us and so helpful to us in providing us you know, context and things like that. It's been great.
Because we're seeing it time. I just see it on social media all the time that there's another chapter has opened up and like, come and join us. We're going to watch the game at such and such.
You make it sound like
club.
Hell's Angels.
Well, it is kind of.
Oh goodness.
Hell's Seagulls.
I mean, but, look at this. Look at this group. Are we not badass?
We are badass. But you say. I mean, obviously, we've got that in the States as well. We're seeing it across the world. We're seeing it from like Australia, New Zealand. We're seeing it, obviously, massive in Japan at the moment. And the club's message is growing like worldwide, a massive rate. And that's exciting. And that's what we want to continue.
We have a lot of U.S. We are mostly U.S. born supporters here in Stateside Seagulls. We do have some expats as well who really help by providing context for newer fans, right? And Lucas talked about, right, like there is this long history, and that's something that because of the season of my life when I became an Albion supporter, I was able to read all the books, right, and like digest all the things. And so providing that context for the newer supporters who, oh, hey, I saw you were in Europe, right? You were in Europe. Now I'm going to support this team. Well, hey, it's not just about Europe, right? It's this is a long journey that we're all in together. And so I think having that combination of the US born supporters with the expats as well has been really, it's been really special. And it's just like a really close-knit community that we have, and we're very kind of protective of that space that we are able to create.
Because one of my close friends lives in Atlanta, and he's been going along to join the Atlanta Seagulls, when they go and watch the games, which has been great for them, and it's been great for him because I'm not gonna lie, he didn't have an awful lot of interest all the time. He actually lived in Brighton, so.
Okay, even taking moving to the States in order to get that. David, can I bring you in back in here again? Because I mean, it's following on from what Laura Ellen is saying here about growing the data, growing the fan base. Is the Albion an easy sell in DC?
I would defer to Madam President, in whose presence I am honored to be on this podcast. Truthfully, I've asked the DC Seagulls, where do y'all meet typically? And it's not clear. There isn't a usual bar match after match, which honestly, I would love to have that experience. So the short answer is I can't tell you. I will say that I encountered stateside seagulls by accident. I was wearing my jersey. Another guy was wearing his coming out of the metro, and he said, "Oh, you should join this thing called Stateside Seagulls." And so here I am.
Brilliant.
So that was word of mouth or word of jersey.
And now you've been on the Albion Raw, so
Let's
your
put it out there
autograph's going to be
now.
worth a few quid now.
Well, let's put it out there. If there are anyone else in DC, and there is a regular place where you go want to go and watch the games, just let us know, and
I think this raises an important contextual point for folks who aren't in the US that even though it's DC Seagulls, right, the DC metropolitan area is ginormous, right? And it takes a long time. So, there, we, David, you and I can connect after, and I can connect you with some of the regular places where people go. But it can even be, okay, well, I'm on the west side of DC, you're on the east side of DC, and it can take an hour and a half to get to where you need to go, depending on traffic. And so that is just one of the things that, from the size and geography of the US, it just makes it just more complicated. And that's why we have a really robust WhatsApp group. And but Lucas, I know Seagulls Over Columbus meets in person, and so I would love for you to share a bit about that.
We have a great group that meets here locally at Parsons North Brewing Company. Me and my fellow co-president Luke Burton, we met right back at the beginning and just spread the word, going to crew games, wearing some Brighton gear when we go to crew games. But we got a great squad. I've got a little one right off screen right here. We've got our wives and kids. We all show up to the brewery at 7:30 in the morning when we play. So have a couple. Enjoy our time. It's 2 blocks away from here. We got a great place to watch the matches, and we're there every single game, Parsons North Brewery. So yeah, Saturday at 3 o'clock. I know you guys got a lot to say about the FA Cup time, but we're gonna love it. 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Don't let's not go there.
Let's not go there.
Checking off right up.
Which of you three has actually? I think I know the answer to this because I think Laura Ellen has clearly done this. But question in that case to David and to Crew Alexandra here is who's done the deepest dive into the Albion history?
Oh
Well,
man,
quiz
I
coming.
can't judge, but I read deeply as well. I was so impressed by the story of coming from playing on an athletic field, on an athletics track. What was it?
Well, that was from
50 odd
99 to
miles away.
2011.
Yeah, that to come from there to this stadium, which I will say looks splendid on TV. And I hope to visit for the first time to celebrate my 70th birthday in April. Against
Nice. Brilliant.
against West Ham, speaking of them.
That's all. Evan can't play.
No, yeah, he won't
Evan
be allowed
can't
to play.
play. Exactly. I'll be spared
Exactly.
that.
Well, in that case, we extend the hand to you. When you come over, come and make yourself known to us, David. There's beers on us, absolutely.
Will do.
Because I know that Laura Ellen's coming over in a couple of weeks' time. Lucas, are you due over here?
I am due over there once I get this little one a little bit bigger. So,
right.
Yeah, we will be over there and sharing. I've only been to London for a couple of days on my way over to Europe for work, but that's about it.
Right. So, yes, in answer to David's question, the stadium is magnificent. It's now, what, 13, 14 years old, so it's nearly got zits. Tony Bloom is in the throes of having it kind of rebuilt, admittedly with a certain largesse from Todd Bowley. Thanks very much. Hey, did you know when the new outside bar is going to be open and ready exactly?
We know
spring, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be funny if it was for the Chelsea, one of the Chelsea games, and you think, thanks, Todd.
It's going to miss it. It's not going to be open by next week.
No, that is the pity.
But
isn't it?
Maybe, just maybe, it might be open in time for Graham Potter's return.
Yes, that's yes, and therefore, yeah. David, you can christen the new bar. Is it got a name? I can't remember. I'm sure it has.
Yeah, whatever the it's else. Called, it'll be called something else. I'm sure.
Now you're right. You should really call it the Bowley Lounge. I think that's perfect.
Well, with Todd's Bar, Todd's Largesse, Todd's Folly.
Cartman. I just called it Cartman.
Because?
Well, have you ever seen Cartman and Ted Bowley in the same room at the same time? I don't know.
That is a good point. So actually, I mean, I asked this of David just now, Lucas, about sort of you being spreading the word. And given, obviously, your realisation of Columbus Crew's parallels with the Albion, has it been an easy-ish sell for friends and family, or is it, you know, you got to sit down and basically, you know, knock on the door and say, have you heard the word of the Albion?
No, it's relatively easy. You know, people who are into the game understand how great of a club and how well it's run, and everybody really respects Brighton across the soccer world here in the United States. And I tell them I'm a fan and tell them a little bit about X, Y, and Z and the history and the parallels to the Crew. And it clicks with people really quickly. Also, we play beautiful. It's a beautiful game. You never watch a game and you are not entertained. You never walk away and be like, well, that was rarely a waste of time.
Stoke City under Tony Pulis.
I'm 45 years into this ride. I can tell you that is not true.
Again, very blessed to be coming on when I did, and but it's been very attractive, very fun, very beautiful game. I bring, like I said, American football dominates here. I bring my football buddies, like, hey guys, who doesn't want to have a beer at 9 o'clock in the morning? Come watch this, and they walk away, and
I'm
they're
sold.
Like,
I'm
that
sold.
Was great.
I'm
that sold, was a good time. They play fun, attractive soccer. Let's come back again next week.
And it's worth moving to the States just to have a beer at airport time. Go on, AD.
Yeah. So, Laura Ellen. So, basically, obviously, there's lots of branches all over the country, as we mentioned. Is there anywhere that hasn't come forward yet, and you would like to see, like, have a branch of Stateside Seagulls?
Pennsylvania.
Well, there's the Steel City Seagulls in Pittsburgh. There's the Philly Seagulls in Philadelphia. So Pennsylvania, at least the two ends of Pennsylvania. Where I am in central Pennsylvania does not have a group yet, unless you count our house, which has a huge Brighton flag out front, where most people would put the United. Most people put their U.S. flag. We fly the Brighton flag here in my household. I do think we would. I think we are two states short or three states short, maybe, of having a member from every single state in the country. Andy, our data board member, is going to get mad at me because I'm blanking. I think we have someone in either Hawaii or Alaska, but I think we need one of them. And then I think I want to say like North Dakota. We don't have any stateside seagulls in North Dakota. So, you know, there's a couple states who are holding out on us. So
I'm pretty sure I've seen Alaskan seagulls. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
I might have to have a look on socials. I'm sure I've seen
Please,
that. I don't know
let
about
me
Hawaii.
Know.
And isn't there the US joke that you've got no one from Montana because no one lives there?
Well, you know, North and South Dakota are a little bit
in
the same boat.
Okay. I mean, I'll have to get my family in because I've got family in
Washington and Oregon State, so I'll have to get
Perfect.
them,
We'll get
got
them
to
on
get them to
board.
sign up.
Yeah, but I mean, if there is anyone listening to this, and you are in the far flung reaches of the state somewhere, and you'd like to get in touch, how do you get in touch with you, Laura Ellen?
You can Google Stateside Seagulls or at statesideseagulls.com, and we have all the information. It is a simple form to fill out to become a member. There is no cost as of right now to be a member of Stateside Seagulls. And yeah, you get perks like voting for the player of the month and then eventually the player of the year, and get sporadic emails from us. And we will have some merch coming out soon, but the details, we're still finalizing those.
Okay. Do you have o overseas honorary members?
Yes, anyone is welcome to join. Although, for example, for our scarf run, I could only ship them to the US. I was not going to have them being brought to my house in the US to then ship right
Well,
back to the UK.
by the way, does Stateside cover Canada?
It does not cover Canada.
Oh.
Canada is its own country, it turns out, and they will have their own seagulls
How about
chapter.
that?
It's
Yeah. We know there's the Toronto Seagulls, but
No, I was just going to add Greenland, Gaza, Panama. I'm sorry. I couldn't not say it.
well,
It's been
quite,
a terrible
absolutely.
it's a terrible time in DC, guys, as
Yeah.
you probably appreciate.
Now, Laura Ellen, I hope you're not going to let the side down here because, I mean, basically, I mean, the Dutch Seagulls, when they welcomed us to Amsterdam, they had a load of stroopwafels with Albion branding, and they were handing out to everybody around the place. Now, what could you hand out to Brighton fans
Wow.
from Pennsylvania?
Well, from Pennsylvania, the first thing that came to mind are they're called whoopie pies. Now, I know you're going to in Western PA, I know.
Sounds
Google,
rude.
Google, just put it in quotes, Google it. But they are essentially two chocolate sugar cookies with vanilla cream filling in the middle. And they are a Pennsylvania Dutch delicacy that are one of my favorite foods. So we could definitely make some seagulls. But I mean that as I mentioned, we're a huge country. There is so many different variations of food and desserts and all kinds of things from all over the country.
Well, in that case, Lucas, what's the delicacy, the delicacy of Ohio?
Here in Ohio, it depends on who you ask. If you ask folks a little farther south here in Cincinnati, they do a pasta that's topped with a cinnamon chili and then shredded cheese. It's a variation of a Greek dish that the Greek immigrants in Cincinnati have made. It's called the most notable restaurant's called Skyline Chili. Here in Columbus, we'd make you a Buckeye. We'd make you a chocolate, basically a chocolate round hole, and then peanut butter inside the middle. And we could spray paint BH AFC across five of them, and we'll give them to you as a package of five. Let's say Brighton Hove Albion FC on them.
And David, it would just be oranges, wouldn't
Oh, stop. Here in the Maryland suburbs, just across the Beltway, just across the line from the District of Columbia, I would recommend a Peruvian roast chicken, and we could brand it with BHAFC,
What
and
about a
they're
Peruvian roast
unforgettably
seagull?
delicious.
Oh, God. See, I was only thinking that out. I mean, that's just wrong, isn't it?
That's so wrong, so
Yeah, but
deeply wrong.
you think of what it's been fed on.
Chips.
Well, if it was in Brighton, it would be
Chips and rubbish.
organic hummus, wouldn't it?
Oh, God. Falafel, yeah.
Falafels,
And
absolutely.
falafel and quinoa, apparently. But
Now, listen, we're drawing to the end of the show here, but let's get a few final thoughts, and not from Saturday. So, David, like I say, I think of us three, and it's brilliant you're coming over very soon as the NKOB. What would you say to people about that you were trying to encourage to watch the Albion? What would be your for you the USPs that you'd actually try and get your friends to support the Albion with?
Yeah, for me, it is the case that Lucas made, that it's a well-run club, that it's smart, that it punches above its weight. We like an underdog here, and we like a team that outperforms expectations. And I think, at least in my experience, Brighton is such a team, and it's a joy to watch them when they're at their best, and we can all complain about them when they're not.
Absolutely.
because it's you know, it's part of the, what's that word?
Don't know what word.
Schadenfreude.
No, it's the process we have to trust. Lucas, same question to you.
Yeah, I would echo a lot of things about the community, the Brighton community that I've met online, and now you very open and accepting to, quite frankly, outsiders in the United States, but that we all love to get up and watch and support this club and this team, and just happy to be a part of this community that at the local levels has really fought for
Yeah.
what they believe in, and it's wonderful to see that develop over years.
Brilliant. And Laura Ellen, last word to the lady of the house.
Yes, I,
She's moving to Washington. Well, you are the president.
me, well,
Lady, let
not
her
that
answer.
president.
Stop it.
No, I echoing everything that has already been said. I think there is something special about this club, and it's not just the men's team. We haven't touched on the women's team today, but the women's team are also on their way up, right? They're playing well, playing better than they have in more recent years. And so it's not just about the men's team. It's also about what the Albion Foundation is doing, what the community work that's happening. And for me, the pitch that I make is that yes, the primary thing that we think about when we think about this club is the men's game on the field, but it's so much more than that.
Yeah.
And so really providing that compelling story of this is where this club has been, this is where the club has come from, and then thinking about how that foundation has been laid to encompass all these different really wonderful activities on and off the pitch. And that's something that I'm really excited about. That's something that folks really connect with,
Yeah.
and that's how I cheer on the Albion.
Just touching on that, what you've just said there, actually. How is the access to the women's team? Presumably because most of the games are on YouTube. It's pretty good, right?
Yes, we are able to now. The timing is not as great, I would say, for the women's matches. They tend to be earlier in the day than the men's matches. But yes, they're all freely available on YouTube, or you know, I'm sure folks know about the club's app. You can watch them right there on the app as well. At least in the States, you can. So access is really great. Now, I will say the commentary is not quite as good, but you know, you still get to watch, like, you can still see what's happening on the
Are
field,
you
and that's
after a new
fantastic.
gig?
I am not. I am currently content with what I'm doing in life.
I'd love to see you give it a go, though.
I don't
Thank
think we would want that.
you. I'll do it. I'll do
Please
it.
don't.
And with that is all we have time for. So thank you so much to El Presidente, Laura Ellen Ashcraft. Thank you to Lucas Daney. Thank you to David Devlin Force. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thanks for listening. Hopefully, we'll be happier next week. See you then. Bye.
Let us be lovers, we'll marry our fortunes together. I've got some real estate here in my bag. So we bought a pack of cigarettes and Mrs. Wagner pies and walked off to look for a bed. Kathy, I said as we boarded a Greyhound in Pittsburgh. This shipping seems like a dream to me now. It took me 4 days to hitchhike from Saginaw. I've come to look for. On the bus, playing games with the faces. She said the man in the gabardine suit was a spy. I said, be careful, his bow tie is really a camera. Toss me a cigarette. I think there's one in my raincoat. We smoke the light. last 1 hour ago. So I looked at the scenery. She read her magazine, and the moon rose over an open field. Kathy, I'm lost, I said, though I knew she was sleeping. I'm empty and aching, and I don't know why. Counting the cars on the New Jersey Turnpike, they've all come to look for a man.